And we are back. This is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and my always trusted guard,
Rob Hubler. Hey, welcome, everyone.
Everyone, this is KRUU FM 100.1, the most powerful radio station on the planet. And we've got two incredible guest hosts tonight as we talk about black and white thinking and what that actually means in the world, in the community, and in terms of mental health issues, which is what we're going to get to. So let's start. Rob, why don't you introduce our guests today?
Well, one to my left, I have Sally Hare. Sally is a longtime resident of Fairfield, and Sally and I share a acquaintance where I have been acquainted with her family for years and years, but never met Sally until we moved here. And then on my right is Andrew Perry. And Andrew, also, you've been here in Fairfield for almost of your life.
Almost, right? 30 years.
Only 30 years, huh?
Okay. But you both have really interesting backgrounds as well that bring a lot to this table. All three of you guys, actually. So everybody knows about my mental health background, but all of you, and one of the discussions I want to pull out of you, Rob, today, is you were a pastor for a long, long time. And in terms of black and white thinking, when we start talking about fundamentalist issues. But Sally, you've got a fascinating background, as well as Andrew, in terms of your community work, in terms of moving past black and white thinking, especially when dealing with community issues. Mm-hmm. So let's start off with talking about why I'm so inspired by this topic. So partially this comes from my issue in terms of working with clients, where clients end up in this kind of black and white modality, which is a fight or flight. And being able to transcend that fight or flight notion into something more powerful where they could have some control over their lives, where they're not reactive or attacking back. Because either side, if I'm withdrawing, then it gives the other person power and they feel abandoned. And if you're attacking, then they feel attacked and they don't want to address things, but it also gives them control and power. Either way, you lose if you run into fight or flight. Either way, you lose when you're talking about relationships. And if you're in a black and white thinking, then it's always your partner's fault or it's always your fault. And you're into this notion of right and wrong, black or white, good or bad. Instead of thinking more holistically, like, well, is this working? Is there another way for this to work better? But I am also inspired because of what's going on in France right now. And this really pushed me to really reconsider this whole notion from a political perspective. Obviously, we have the political perspectives in this country that has really become so damaging, so polarized. But in France right now, this whole notion of what's happened in terms of fundamentalists feeling justified in killing people. And then people trying to come together and say, we are Charlie, we are Jews, we are France, and trying to create some unity out of this. And trying to move past the polarizations to actually finding some workable solution, not just for today and not just for a photo op, but for 6 months, for 60 years, for 600 years more. Okay, a little of much. Rav, what do you think?
Well, you know, I was listening to radio, NPR, and they were interviewing a Muslim reporter from France. And they were talking to him about the situation, and they said to him, you know, well, what do you do when you are so upset because of one of the original pictures that was drawn? What was it called? They were caricatures. And that's what started this whole thing, was the caricatures. And he said, well, you know, if you have a faith that is so weak that a caricature threatens it, you need to find a new faith. And I thought that was, you know, a very perceptive look at how, you know, if you're so prone to being this way that you can't be, anything at all comes and threatens that you need to look for something new to do. In my experience as a pastor, and in the church, you know, many people had a affinity toward saying, "Well, you know, this is the way it has to be," and if it isn't that way, then their whole faith gets shaken, and they come and they say, "You know, what's going on here?" And as you know, I can't say as, you know, I think I did a great job as a pastor, but it wasn't exactly not a bumpy trail, because I'm a person who isn't really prone to be totally on one side or totally on the other side, and try to encourage people to move to the middle and to know that there is a different color than black and white, that, that it's a gray area. And in terms of mental health, you know, that's what we're, this effort's been going on here for the last several months out at MUM and in town here, in dealing with gray areas rather than trying to deal with the black and white areas.
And this is an issue across the country, of course. And it, again, we see the political spectrum so polarized that nothing can get done. That it is either everything Obama does is wrong or everything he does is right. And it's like, no, that's not how life works. People aren't so polarized, and that's not the way to govern. And it certainly has an effect when we're dealing with people. And it doesn't matter what the issue is. We could be talking about climate change, right or wrong. Sally, you were bringing that up earlier.
Yeah, if you look at everything going on in our culture and worldwide, really, you've got, it seems to me, an agenda to keep people polarized. What's the agenda? You know, is it, does it make sense politically to keep Israel at war with Palestinian opposition? I mean, what is the agenda? Is it agenda to sell arms? Is it agenda? Is there really empathy for the other side with black and white thinking? There's no empathy. There's they're right. I mean, I'm right and you're wrong. And that's the way all fundamentalist thinking is really, that's how I see it, is you go to an extreme with ISIS saying, okay, we are going to create an Islamic State, and anyone who's not with us is obviously against us. So there's no room for any conversation there. There's no room for conversation between Democrats and Republicans if Obama is wrong, and they will come to the table and they will not sit and discuss and not come to compromise. So it makes it hard being a political person in the times that we're in, because there's no room for real dialogue. What I was talking to you earlier was an article I read many, many years ago about the abortion question.
And great example.
You know, for example, I had somebody in my family who died from an illegal abortion. Now, do I believe I would have ever had an abortion? No, I don't believe that. But I believe in a woman's right to choose. But what has happened over the years with this discussion, it's become so black and white that there's just name calling from side to side. There's never any sitting down and discussing, well, what is the best thing for women? What is the best thing for women's health? What is the best thing for our culture to move forward with consciousness about women's issues? We just keep people in conflict.
Why do you think that's the case?
Let me jump in there for a second. Yeah.
Because you just said it a minute ago. You said, you know, what is it that that people are looking for when they try to force you into, as Scott was saying, a flight or fight situation? I believe in politics and in the abortion issue, it's money. If you do not have the controversy between the pro-choice and the pro-life groups, you can't raise money. And if you can't raise money, you can't contribute it to the candidates that are on your side or the other side. Same thing, I think, you know, there are people that would accuse this of being oversimplification, I'm sure. But the same thing in Israel. If you have the two states get together, Palestinian state and the Israeli state get together, there's no longer any reason to raise money, and therefore you can't finance one side or the other. Everything, from my point of view, comes back to money. Period.
And money equals power.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So how do I not say you guys are cynical? By the way,
and power is related, really, to egotism. It's related to showing that my thinking is correct. I'm the one who's right.
That's right.
So you have to have power if you're egotistic. And if you're in this trap of black and white thinking, you're holding on to your position. If you're willing to listen, if you're willing to dialogue, if you're willing to have community, and I'm sure Andrew could speak more about that, you can have real solution where you actually come together in conferences or dialogue with people and actually meet with people who are your quote enemies, because really no one is your enemy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the black and white things that we have to deal with here is that we're able to talk right now because we are on KRUU FM 100.1 on your dial in Fairfield, Iowa.
And email us if you have any fight in ya, you want to talk about any issues, you want to be on the air even, or you want anything. mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. Andrew, why don't you bring up your notion of community? Because you had a really fascinating perspective on this.
Yeah, sure. I want to touch just a moment on this idea of fundamentalist thinking, because I think it's a lot more personal than maybe certain political parties on the far extremes of the left and right spectrum or all these other instances. I think it's me and you and us and the listener, you. We have a tendency, I think it's our first tendency, is towards this sort of idea of fundamentalist thinking. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the name I would choose for it, but if someone cuts us off in traffic, of course it's their fault. And we come up with all stories as to why we're right and that person was wrong. There's even a cognitive bias. This is the fundamental attribution error, correspondence bias, where we come up with a story as to why, of course, we're right and that other person's just a really bad driver or doesn't know any better. Or we attribute all these internal things, whereas when we cause something, we understand there's a whole circumstance and context that is created for that. So I think fundamentalist thinking is just our first go-to cognitively, is we assume that what we are experiencing is correct.
It's our default, in a sense, to keep us safe.
Yeah. I mean, it would not make sense for us to think that we're doing something that we know to be not correct. We would just do that other thing we think is more correct. And so our I think, initial stance is just be, yeah, what I'm thinking is right. And then I think where the mistake, where it becomes fundamental, is when it doubles down. When you start to get feedback that maybe someone else has different information or different values or different goals, and then we just assume still that they must have the same goals, the same values, the same information. And so I think that's where the real break is between what I would say is that's the creation or the extension of fundamentalist thinking, when there's like a rigidity, and that's when communication shuts down due to maybe stigmatizing the other or to dehumanize that person that we have that conflict with. And to me, I think that a lot of this is just around conflict. And that's where my experience with community is more relevant, because a lot of community is just how do you get past these conflicts that inevitably arise, and to not consider them, as we've all been trained to, as bad or negative things, but really as just an opportunity for us to get to know each other's values and goals more, and to remove some ignorance or assumption, some false assumption we have about our fellow community members as not being sensitive, caring, sensitive or caring or respectful or loving people. Because that's really the tragedy to me, is that I live on this planet with an enormous amount. Almost every single person is a sensitive, loving, respectful, caring person. And then we have all these stories that prevents us from experiencing that fact.
Well,
and so when conflict comes up, then it's great, because then you get to see that that wall start to dissolve through as the communication goes on, and the hearts start to open up, and there's an acknowledgement of, oh, you really just had a different experience than I did. Mm. And I understand that based on that, with those beliefs and what you're trying to do, that makes sense to you. And so once there's that acknowledgement, then that's the, in terms of that split path of our first assumption being we're right, and then to either go into the fundamentalist of right and wrong or this acknowledgement of, oh, this person had a different experience, is like the first step, I think.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now called The Power of Perfectionism, I think it is, by a woman named Brené Brown. And she talks about this you know, I'm real uncomfortable saying black and white thinking, by the way. And I'm also uncomfortable using the word fundamentalist. And I mean, we really haven't come up with a word here right now that kind of makes me feel okay saying it. But she says that...
No, I'm glad that, you said that.
Yeah, people really don't think that way in a rigid way if they have a good spirituality. And she defines spirituality as being, first off, that we are connected to each other. And secondly, there is a power greater than all of us connected together. That's her idea of spirituality. And that once you feel that we're all connected, you begin to move away from this fear of the unknown and fear of change to hope. And hope is a big word, in her book, in terms of saying that, you know, we're no longer looking at the situation from what harm this will do to me if I don't believe the way, or if somebody else doesn't believe the way I believe, but instead looking at what can the situation, how can it change, and what would it be like after that changes, because I'm connected to you and you're connected to me, and what happens to me is going to affect you and vice versa. So, you know, and I'm not real, you know, I'm not articulating the book the way...
Well, I would agree with you that this idea of the framing of the subject as black and white thinking or fundamentalism, I think, is a little bit of a red herring. I think, to me, what I see is a pattern, like, in these issues, as I participate in conflict and conflict resolution, is there's a safeness, I think, is the first requirement, is that people don't... If they're avoiding conflict, and to avoid conflict is to avoid the resolution of that conflict. Conflict avoidance maybe is one strategy. I'm not sure how effective it is. But to actually want to engage in resolving conflict requires you to overcome that fear. And so if people don't feel safe individually or in those relationships or in their community or in their lives, then trying to meet that conflict and to work towards a better solution is not really an option they think might be open to them. So if that safeness can first be established, then I think all that's needed is some patience and some vulnerability, because to express what you actually feel in these situations and to open up to others can be, again, scary. And so it requires vulnerability. And so the opposite of that would be to be impatient with others, to not take the time to understand what they're thinking or what they're feeling, is to be impatient. And then to not be vulnerable then is to just be closed off. Yeah, to people.
In the book, the word vulnerability is a huge word in there, and the ability to be vulnerable, that's right.
We just high five.
That was a high five, folks. Sally, you've got a paper sitting in front of you there that I think has that term on the front of it that I don't like. But anyway, the black and white thinking. You know, share some of that with us.
Well, I was looking online and was looking at blogs on black and white thinking, and this was just a question. So how is it that people become so polarized? And when we fall victim to black and white thinking, we reduce an endless spectrum of possibilities to the two most extreme positions, stating in short that home is either north or south, when home may indeed be southeast or northwest, or in some cases both, depending on the necessary route. Black and white thinking is attractive because it's reductionistic. It simplifies everything, so we don't really have to comprehend. It allows us to feel intelligent without understanding. And once we are intelligent, we feel superior. People who don't agree with us are just dumb.
Well, that takes care of the show.
Yes, and our partner is right or they're wrong.
Yeah.
And again, it's, you know. So after the break, why don't you finish and then we'll...
Well, he goes on to talk about different things to train ourselves not to be in black and white thinking. Hmm.
How does he suggest? Because I love Andrew's notion as well.
One is to disengage your ego from ideas. That is, we can train ourselves... they may be true ideas, which make them important, but they aren't necessarily our true ideas, and people should have the free will to either agree or disagree with them. It's very difficult to be honest with ourselves about whether our egos are involved, but it's the territory of a better thinker. Understand that there is much you don't understand.
Oh, good.
You know, great. That's a huge one.
Huge.
Walk away from black and white conversations. You know, so if you recognize, oh, we're getting, and there were some words that came into play, always, never, perfect, impossible, awful, terrible.
If I can clarify, the walk away from the conversation doesn't mean to walk away from the person, but maybe just to change the style in which you are talking to them.
Yeah.
Or to take back control over yourself as a timeout, breathe, as again in couples work, take some time for yourself. Concretely, I will be back in 17 minutes. I love giving an odd number, by the way. And I will be back in 17 minutes, at which time I'd love to re-engage and re-tag, and actually holds yourself that your word actually means something. By the way, you are listening to
KRUU-FM 100.1 on your radio dial, solar-powered radio in Fairfield, Iowa, and as Scott always says, the most powerful station in the world.
We broadcast 6 Thursday and Tuesday, and rebroadcast 12:30 on Thursday afternoons. And do email us, mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. One idea that I want to bring up is, what do you actually do, and you guys started alluding to this, when you have this black and white thinking? Or, again, I like the notion better, which you were saying, Andrew, and Rob, you were talking about, in terms of almost a rigid thinking, almost as we talked before the show about concrete operations, keeping things very reductionistic. What do you do? So, for example, let me give you two examples here. One is something you've all heard me talk about before. I'm having a conflict with somebody here who goes all medicine, all psychotropic medicine is bad. And it makes me then have to be in a corner of saying, oh, I'm going to be a shrill for the a spokesperson for the pharmaceutical industry because I've got to say it's good, or I've got to agree with this person and say it's bad, when it isn't work like that. That is not how life works. As everyone's heard me say, for instance, if you are mildly depressed, then lifestyle changes, exercise, meditation, diet, sleep, talking to a therapist and addressing the issues, finding a way to deal with the circumstances as well as the biology, which is what mild depression really addresses, those two conditions, circumstances and biology, then most likely I could shift with even just some mild supplements, if it's even needed, whatever neurochemistry is going on. If you're majorly depressed or bipolar, you know what? Your brain's kind of messed up at the moment, and you really need some support, which might mean some pharmaceutical help, which is a whole lot better than dying, which is what we have happening over and over and over again, especially in this community and throughout the world, because conditions aren't being addressed. And so that doesn't mean that you have to be on medication the rest of your life. It might mean that if you do some of these lifestyle changes, your medication could be drastically reduced, or you might need some other kind of treatment. But it's getting back to you taking control over you so you know what works for you. I said to somebody today, I'm a vegetarian. That doesn't mean that I have judgment on you for eating meat. It's what works for your body. It's not about morals anymore. It's about what works for you today in your body and in your mind and in your heart and in your spirit. So how do you escape that black and white discussion, again, that rigid thinking with somebody else? Andrew, you were going through a conflict with somebody here in terms of they are starting to polarize you, and you're going, how do I have this discussion when their thinking is very rigid? And I'm trying to be open to them, but then it becomes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I just walked away from dealing with a conflict within our project, which was actually resolved within that space. But just to go back to this example you introduced with this woman, for me, typically the questions are always, what do you mean by all medicine? Or what do you mean by medicine? What do you mean by bad?
Exactly.
And just like seek to understand first. I don't actually understand what she's saying yet before I can. And also, what is my agenda? Is like, What context are we having this conversation? Because for me, there needs to be, is she forcing this lifestyle upon her child or upon another person? Is it creating some conflict, or is it just ideological, or are you just having a philosophical debate? Because, like, I don't, you can have that conversation. That's not one that is necessarily interesting to me specifically. But if it's an actual conflict, then where is that conflict? Because where's the actual, like, party that's being affected? Or is it her as an individual? And then it would be, well, I have concern, you know, for you, and I want to just check in. Are things actually working out for you? Is that approach really serving you? Or is there some problems that could be addressed in this other way? So I think in my experience, avoiding the reflecting the rigid thinking, avoid shaming the person. Yeah, I don't find, I see that, yeah, as being like a quick step that everyone kind of gets to. It's just like, oh, we just have to lash out and tell this person they're stupid, or
my,
like, whatever it is.
Wrong. Why did she do this?
And shame again, if getting out of this other way of relating to each other is requires safety to do that, an experience of safeness, then shaming someone is the quickest way to shut down that experience.
Yeah.
For me, just really understanding what is her motivation, what are her values, because they're probably good human values. She probably just has real concern, has probably some real tragic experience in her past of someone being really harmed by traditional medicine.
And
so
they have been.
Yeah, and that occurs. And so affirming that and really understanding, and so she knows that you understand exactly what she is saying, and then you still, you're like, yeah, I totally get why you have that position, and there's still these other circumstances that I'm also aware of that you aren't aware of, in which this medicine is needed or is helpful for these people. Yeah. Trying to understand exactly what that person is first saying, so that they can be confident that when you say, I still disagree with you, that they understand that it's not there's not something personal, there's not you lacking some understanding of their position, but you can restate it to them.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes to go. But responding to you, one of the things that comes to mind is that the ability to get to that point that you were talking about also involves a whole lot of trust from that other person to you, and the trust back and forth. In my experience in the ministry, if I'm vulnerable and I talk about my vulnerabilities, the other person will feel confident to talk about theirs, and then you can begin to have some kind of a dialogue.
Yeah, I would say trust begets trust, vulnerability begets vulnerability.
That's right.
That's always
love
been my experience.
Love, and But anyway, you're listening to KRUU Radio 100.1 FM, and we're coming to the end. And Scott, would you want to summarize everything, and so everybody knows how to deal with this from now on, and we'll solve all the problems?
I think there's a number of
do all the things.
Yeah, I think there's a number of ideas on the table today. Let's just go around one last time, Sally. What would you like to conclude with today?
Well, I would just like to conclude with what Andrew spoke about. I see on a global level that there really needs to be more empathy and dialogue between different people of different positions in the world on pretty much everything. And we don't see a lot of that, and that needs to be encouraged.
We've been moving, in fact, away from that.
Yes.
Because people, again, you brought up that word fear. Mm-hmm. And it's like letting go enough of the fear so you could feel strong in who you are. That doesn't mean you have to judge, shame, guilt, remorse, anybody else, or anything else about you. And it's like letting go of that fear so we can move forward. And that is true individually and politically and every other way. Rob, what do you want to say?
Very quickly,
finish?
The name of the book, by the way, in case anybody cares, it's not The Power of Perfection. It's The Power of Imperfectionism. and again, for me, the real connection is whether or not how we feel about us in the world. Are we connected to other people? Is everybody together? You know, are we, you know, compassionate to other people? You know, can we love other people? And when other people return that and we put that out, I think then compromise and dialogue begins.
Okay. Any quick last word?
Yeah, last word for me is just building off of the idea of more empathy is needed, because in the history of the world, all violence and war, all the great tragedies have occurred through the lack of empathy and by the dehumanization and stigmatization of the other.
Great way to end it. Thank you, everyone. Great talk today. Mental Health Matters. Bye.